Hey, everybody, and welcome to another Playful Humans podcast. I'm your host, Mike Montague, and my guest this week is a writer and former TV executive named Art Bell. He's right there. We're going to talk with him about what it's like to play for a living, because he was one of the creators of Comedy Central, known as the Comedy Channel there. His book, Constant Comedy, How I Started Comedy Central and Lost My Sense of Humor, is available right now. He also does the Constant Comedy podcast, so you can check that out wherever you are listening to this podcast. As always, you can join the club and take our free online quiz about how playful you are at playfulhumans.com. Here we go. The Playful Humans podcast. We like to start with the joke of the week. The joke of the week is brought to you by the pun contest. The pun contest. I entered 10 of my best puns and to see if any of them would win, but no pun intended. Okay, now let's try an actual joke at the pun contest. No pun intended did win. What do you call a large dog that meditates?
I don't know. What do you call a large dog that meditates?
An a werewolf. I kind of like that one. I'm going to be honest. Made myself laugh. All right. Welcome to the podcast, Art.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah. You were, started Comedy Central, founded that for them when you were working with...
I was working at HBO. Yes.
Studios. HBO. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to guess, but I didn't want to guess wrong. So thanks for helping me out there. let's just go ahead and start there, because I feel like that's kind of an interesting headline, and there's got to be a lot of story there, because in your book, you say you also lost your sense of humor during that process. And I found that when people play for a living and it becomes a profession, it kind of sucks all the fun out of it. It happened to me in radio. It sounded like it happened to you on TV. Tell me about that process and what that story was.
Yeah. The name of the book is Constant Comedy, How I Started Comedy Central and Lost My Sense of Humor. And I must say, I didn't, it's not like comedy was a disaster for me after I started the channel. I did want to name it that because I wanted to give people the immediate impression that starting Comedy Central was not so much fun that I couldn't stand it. It was really hard work. And there was a lot of pressure on me personally, since I was the one who pitched it and said, hey, here's what we ought to do. And here's how we ought to do it. So it was tough. And that first year I went to work every day wondering if this would be the last day of Comedy Central and comedy art. So, there, that would have been the end of my comedy career, I guess.
And how did you get to that point? I read your bio a little bit. It sounded like you liked comedy. You did some acting and performance, but would you consider yourself a comedy person before that? Or was that really, you were a TV executive and this just happened to be the next channel that was starting?
Well, at the time I probably was neither. I was a comedy nerd from a kid, from the time a kid. I watched the Ed Sullivan Show when I was young, like 7 or 8 years old, and saw some of the great Borscht Belt comics and Richard Pryor, actually. You know, all those guys were on Ed Sullivan at 8 o'clock on every Sunday night. And I was fascinated. I have to say, I thought, man, anybody who could make an entire audience laugh at the same time, with all due respect, you just told a joke and you did get me to laugh, but I'm not sure you could get a million people to laugh at the same time with that particular joke. So I just thought, man, that's a superpower I want to learn more about. And I fell in love with comedy.
That's so interesting. And my next question then would be about that time frame, because music television had started and playing music videos 24 hours is you had this cable, network where we got more channels, we need to fill more time, and in creating these theme channels seems like an interesting time, because Comedy Central, I kind of think, was the same way as MTV, where it started as just comedy specials and stand-up comedy and then evolved into other types of programming. Is that how you see it, or did I miss an interesting part of the story there of how that evolved?
No, that's pretty close. I mean, that comedy Central, which started as Comedy Channel, was always committed to comedy full time. I mean, we have seen in the cable industry some channels wandering away from their initial inspiration. I think MTV is a good example of that. They certainly started with music videos and a lot about music. Suddenly they're doing, you know, reality shows that had almost nothing to do with music, except that there was music in the background. So I will say that a friend of mine was running Sci-Fi Channel when one day I noticed they put on a football game. And I called him up. I said, "Dave, for God's sake, what is going on?" And he said, "Look, the bosses said we got to get audience, and that's how we're going to get audience." I said, "Yeah, but you're walking away from your brand, you know? I mean, you guys are about sci-fi. I want to see spooky, weird stuff, man. And that's not the NFL." Anyway, Comedy Central, I think, has been pretty true. By the way, it's its 30th anniversary this year. April 1st marked the 30th anniversary of the launch. Comedy Central stayed pretty true to we do comedy, you know, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah, I love that. And I do see that as one of the most consistent brands in there. There are different types of comedy, right? So I think that's also maybe a better genre, where MTV could have played different types of music shows or done the behind the music things like VH1 did and stuff. But comedy, it all kind of fits in there, like a roast, a stand-up comedy act, a sitcom, all of those kind of fit together in a comedy genre, which is nice. And I guess it leads me to ask the question, where do you think it, I mean, to me, it kind of sounds like a no-brainer because I love it. I've been a huge Comedy Central fan. I love comedy. It's like, well, who would not want to laugh? Who would not want to watch this stuff? What was the hardest part about starting something that is kind of so fun and playful and things that you think on the surface everybody should like and watch?
Well, it's a multi-layered question. The first question you're asking is, why wasn't there one before? And that was a question I always asked. Like, I wanted, when I came out of school, I wanted to work in the TV business, and I wanted to work at an all-comedy network. I mean, there was an all-music network, right? So why wasn't there an all-comedy network? That was my passion. There was an all-sports network. There was an all-news network. You know, I mean, we all know the drill. So that's why I started thinking about it, and that's why I ultimately pitched it. And so I was as confused as anyone might have been when I was told that it wasn't a good idea, that it just wasn't something that could be done effectively. And you know what? Looking back on that first year, maybe they were right. I will say this, comedy is hard. You know, if you started a drama channel, people wouldn't call you up and say, "Hey, you know what? It's good, but make it more dramatic." You start a comedy channel, and guess what they say? It's good or it's not good, but make it funnier. It's not funny. It's not funny enough. And that's what we were facing. And I think that's why people were reluctant to start it. One of the reasons people were reluctant to go into it in the first place.
What do you feel like was your greatest success there? Was there something that made it take off or something you're particularly proud of that you did in your time there?
Well, I have to say, even before we launched a show called Mystery Science Theater 3000, which has been a fan favorite for 30 years plus, you know, that actually showed up in the mail before we started the channel. Yeah, I kid you not. And I tell that story in my book. But our head writer, who is named Eddie Gordetsky, very funny guy, still writing in Hollywood. He said, you know, he talked funny. He said, you know what we need? We need a show where comedians watch TV or the movies and make funny jokes, because that's what we do. And we all said, well, that sounds like a good idea. So we started working on that. And about a week later, honestly, we get an envelope in the mail, and it's got a letter and says, "Hey, we hear you guys are starting a comedy channel. Is this something that would interest you?" And it was Mystery Science Theater 3000. These guys were doing it at a local Minneapolis television station. That's when I knew that I was onto something, that, you know, regardless of how things went, my vision for the comedy network was that it would attract innovative comedy, that the comedy would start coming to us. And so there it was, even before we launched, something that, you know, Mystery Science Theater 3000 wasn't getting on NBC or CBS, wasn't even getting on HBO, but it was going to get on a comedy network, and there we were. So I felt good about that.
That's awesome and a great illustration. But now I want to shift to talking about you. Again, the book is Constant Comedy, the podcast by the same name you can find as well. How I Started Comedy Central and Lost My Sense of Humor. Check it out by Art Bell, and you can find him at artbellwriter.com. Now, Art, I know a little bit from reading your background here, too, that you kind of started with a serious job and you went to school and got a bunch of, you know, great business degrees that helped you as a TV executive, but not necessarily playful and fun career. And then you mentioned you started Comedy Central and lost your sense of humor. So I imagine that you found it again somewhere. So can you tell me a little bit about your career path and how you see the difference between work and play and humor and enjoying what you're doing versus being successful and professional?
Yeah, that's fair. You say I started out with a serious job. I did start out as an economist in Washington, D.C., working on complicated problems, building complicated econometric models of the economy. And it was fun. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's an unexpected answer for you, but that was... like I was having a blast. I got to work with really smart people, and it's really, you know, I find that the people you work with is, that's part of what makes a job fun or not fun. We were all young. Pretty much all of us were young, except the bosses, you know, but we were all young and we were in it for a good time. And we used to go away together on weekends and go camping or skiing, whatever it is. So that was really one of the more fun moments of my life, I would say, you know. Because I was just out of school and figuring out who I was. I came to the conclusion about 3 years into it that I did not want to go to economics grad school. I did not want to be an economist, and I probably didn't want to do what I was doing for much longer. So I decided to change the channel and I went to business school. I went back to school and, I found a lot of fun at business school, I got to say. You know, again, another place where you do work hard and you have to be sort of be on your game. But I did something there called the Wharton Follies, which was unexpected for me, an unexpected treat. It turns out that every year the students at Wharton Graduate School put on a show. And it's a satirical musical comedy written and performed by the students. So I immediately got involved with that. And in that were a lot of basically professionals from the industry who wanted to get out of the industry and into investment banking or consulting or whatever else you do in coming out of business school. So that was the most fun I had in graduate school, I got to say. And the second year I wrote the show myself. I say myself, you don't do anything yourself, right? But I was the head writer and I wrote the show essentially.
Yeah.
And I reminded myself how much fun comedy was and how much I loved comedy. And also that I had a little knack for it. So there was that. Then when I got to actually doing comedy, I was teamed up with a guy named Stu Smiley. He was the head of comedy programming at HBO. And the first thing he said to me when he met me was, "What do you know about comedy?" And the answer was not much. I did not know about the comedy business at all. Stu had been in it for 10 or 12 years. He knew every comedian. He knew their home numbers, their managers, their agents, what things cost. I had no idea. I hadn't even been in programming. I had been a marketing and financial analyst before I pitched the channel. So suddenly I'm in this comedy club, but guess what? I wasn't in the club. You know, it was really kind of tough to break in. And that was an unexpected difficulty as I got into the whole thing. I ended up teaching myself because Stu was not the kind of guy who took you under his wing and said, "Let me show you how this works." Yeah. but we got on and we put the channel together. Some of it was really fun. I was there for 8 years and, you know, when it was successful. And some of it I felt so personally responsible for having this channel come into existence in the first place that I took it probably too seriously. You know, I realized that if it failed at some point, hundreds of people would lose their job. Reputations were on the line. I didn't have much of a reputation in the early days, but other people did. And they didn't want to, you know, blow it. So it was a combination of fun and not fun. But once again, it's the people who make it fun.
Yeah. And, I mean, I can totally relate specifically for me in radio as the radio host, or I hosted and DJed in like bars and clubs and weddings and stuff. I found myself in a similar kind of spot with the music industry that I can't actually play an instrument. I know you do, and I want to ask you about that, but I can't play an instrument. I can't sing. I can't do anything, but I'm introducing and meeting all these musicians where I'm not in the club, but I'm club adjacent to their things, where it feels like maybe comedy was the same for you. You did some of it, but you didn't consider yourself a comic and you weren't doing stand-up and stuff. So I'm sure it had to be hard to be a part of the club. What would you say to maybe somebody that's younger? I don't think we ever feel like we're part of the club. It's just as humans, or maybe that's my flaw that I'm projecting. But did you ever feel like you did make it in, or that it was okay to not be a comedian and still be involved with fun stuff like
that? Well, just to expand on that, it wasn't only not being a comedian, it was not being a comedy professional in any way, shape, or form. I mean, there were comedy writers. We had a head writer, as I mentioned, and lots of other writers around. There were, you know, there's all kinds of comedy going on besides stand-up. But it wasn't so much that I wasn't a comedian as I just had no experience with this. I didn't know the language. I didn't know how to act when I was getting a comedy pitch. Usually I just start laughing and slide off my chair. That wasn't really the right way to go about it, I was told. You know, so I had a lot to learn. I did learn it. And I will say that I just kept working at it. You know, I just was not going to be deterred by all the people. You know, the head writer actually took me to lunch one day. And I tell this story in my book, at a strip club at noon, which was a new kind of experience for me, but not for him, apparently. And it was just the two of us and the stripper and the waitress. And he explained to me that I knew nothing about comedy and that I should really kind of relinquish all my responsibilities and programming to him, which, I mean, as absurd as that sounds, because he couldn't do my job and I couldn't do his, yeah. He thought he could do mine, you know, because he knew about comedy. Anyway, that's what it was like. So I walked away from there thinking, not, oh my God, I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing. I thought, well, look, I got my strengths and weaknesses and I'm doing the best I can, which is all anybody is doing around here.
Yeah, I think that's great. And good advice for people too, trying to figure it out or wanting to break into something that they're not part of, is everybody starts at zero. You know, very few people are born into the comedy club or the music club or whatever it is. You know, you have to learn how to play and how to have fun and how to meet people and learn the lingo and stuff. And all that just comes with time. I think that's something that I've learned along the way too. People used to ask me, like, when I got my own radio show, you know, locally, like, oh, well, that's so cool. How do you do that? And you're like, well, you start, you get behind any microphone that will have you. I started in a college radio station with nobody listening. The signal didn't make it over the hill to the dorms. Like, it was that bad. And then you get slightly less crappy gigs until eventually you get some good ones. And so I think that's really good advice for everybody. I wanted to ask you about playing the piano and drums though. Has that always been a part of your life? And do you still use it to play and have fun?
My mother was a piano teacher, and so we grew up with the piano. You know, awesome. I had two brothers younger. We all had to play piano, and it wasn't explained that we had to play piano. It was just sort of assumed since everybody else around was playing the piano, right? And none of us liked practicing, I will say. You know, we didn't like practicing, but after a while, we found things, I think, to like in it. You know, it was fun to learn. And we took our teachers very seriously. We kind of idolized some of our teachers. My mother was not our teacher. But, you know, the whole idea, you know, I have a particular fondness in my heart for teachers everywhere of all stripes, because, you know, they can be so important to us and important to who we become. And yes, I still play piano. And the reason I still play piano is because when I came out of college, and I hadn't played for a few years, I realized I missed it. And so I took it up again. And now it was on my terms, right? It wasn't somebody telling me, this is what you have to do. Here's your teacher.
Right.
Now it's me looking for a teacher, me deciding what kind of music I wanted to play. And I'd learned jazz. Now I had been brought up on classical, but I said, I got to figure out this jazz stuff because I love listening to it. And I learned how to play jazz piano. And then totally enjoyable. I mean, you know, you can't have more fun than playing music or singing with other people. And I think people who play music with other people or sing with other people will tell you that. I think there's actually, you know, kind of a brain chemistry that alters when you're singing together with other people. Anyway, drums came later. Drums, I was 50 when I started drums. Again, it was jazz drums that got me intrigued by the whole, you know, with it. And I said, man, I bet that's fun to do. Because I saw a jazz drummer at a club and he looked like he was dancing. He wasn't just playing the drum. He was dancing. And I said, boy, the joy that guy seemed to be feeling. I want to get a piece of that. So guess what? It worked because it is so much fun to play the drums. And I started out pretty badly, as you can imagine. I mean, it is very difficult to learn an instrument at the age of 50, especially when you're me. I'm not particularly talented, but I stuck with it. And, you know, anybody can get to some level of competency. And I just love playing jazz drums.
That's great. I learned a ton there. I was assuming that the drums were like the rebel, you know, a teenage thing when you're like, I'm not playing the piano for my teacher. I'm going to go learn the drums. But no, that's so great. You came to it late. And I love what you said there. I think there is a syncopation with other people when you're dancing and singing with other people and you're involved, there's a flow state that you enter, which is very much, much playful and present that I think is a special moment for people. It's a lot of fun. So great. My grandmother, great grandmother was a piano teacher. So it didn't make it down to me, but, most of my family can
never
play
too
the
late,
piano.
Never too late. It's hard. It's hard when you're older, but it's not impossible.
I tell you, it's one on my fun bucket list for sure. I was going to go with what you said there too, about learning late is, I don't think it's very hard to get to at least a respectable level where I think if I could sit down at a piano and play a song, people would go, whoa, you can play the piano. They don't know whether I missed a note or not, right? Because they don't know music that well either. I don't expect to ever be a piano prodigy in a symphony or something at my age.
Too late on the prodigy thing.
Yeah. You can get, but I could get to a reasonable level of fun to at least get good at enough where I'm having fun with people, or I could show off at a party or something.
Well, at this point in our lives, and we're at different points in our lives, but in this point in my life, for sure, it's about enjoying what I'm doing, you know, and I, you know, I took up writing for the same reason. I like writing. I like reading what I wrote. I get a kick out of it. And that's why I do it. So, you know, I think that it's important, whether it's your job or whether it's your hobby, to really get a kick out of it, you know, to have something in your life that you just think, man, this is so much fun. I can't stand it.
Yeah, I love that. And congratulations to you on getting to a point in your life where you get to choose what those things are. And you don't necessarily have to worry about the monetary investment or how much you're doing. I think there's such an interesting thing for people where, you know, play stuff doesn't have to be a career. You can cover your bills in other ways and still find other things to have fun. Or if you're lucky, sometimes your career is playful, but I think there's a lot of different variations of that. And that's what I'm hearing from your careers. You had fun in economics and you can make that fun, or you have fun with Comedy Central or playing the piano. It doesn't have to be a job. It could be a hobby. It could be a mission and something you care deeply about and other cool things. I think that's really cool. You've always seemed to be at least aware of the balance, if not able to find some of that in your career.
Again, my story at Comedy Central, it's not like I leave out the fun parts. There are a lot of fun parts. As I said, you know, when you're falling off of a chair because you're in the room with a famous comedian telling you something really funny, you know, you can't really kind of find that everywhere. I produced a show with Robert Klein at Comedy Channel pretty early in the situation. I got to know him. He was a hero of mine. So right off the bat, talk about fun. Talk about just being in the room with him, talking about comedy, talking about, we were doing a show about old time comics. You know, so you find fun all over the place, you know, meet your heroes. That's fun in whatever discipline you're in.
Yeah.
And I will say one other thing, as long as you got me waxing philosophic.
You bet. Yeah.
You know, yes, I'm sort of at the point where I'm not working the way I was working. I've done consulting for a while, but the book has become a job, but it's fun. Promoting the book and the podcast and all the other things. So we never really stopped working. But I talked to some of my friends who are still, you know, like buried in whatever their jobs have been. And they say, you know what? We can't retire like you can because you had things to do. You can play piano or the drums or write or do this. And I say, well, wait a second. And then they point out that they never cultivated those things, anything. If you never cultivate anything, and some of these guys, people, women, are workaholics. And I say, well, wait a second. If you don't cultivate that, what are you going to do? Work for the rest of your life? I mean, just, you know, till you're 90, or are you going to stop and try something else? And that's not stopping work, but that's just doing something different.
I love that. And I think you nailed my mission here with Playful Humans is to empower all levels of people. I think we talk about play a lot for children, right? And that's obvious, but I think young adults need help realizing that you can have a playful career. I think middle-aged people need to figure out why you're burning out and why you hate the life that you thought you were going to have if you followed this checklist of things. And then you're right. I think when you get to retirement age, a lot of people struggle when their career is over of, oh gosh, now this is what I was waiting for. This is the finish line. I'm supposed to go play and I have no idea how to do that. And I love that it should be a part of your whole career and life experience that shouldn't just be work or a grind for you. So I really appreciate you sharing that. One last question for you.
Sure.
Is there anything left on your fun bucket list? Is there anything that you've always wanted to do or a goal or something that you want to check off?
Well, I got to say that just before the pandemic started, my wife and I took scuba diving lessons for the first time. And we went on a couple of scuba diving trips and a bunch of dives. And we're looking forward to getting back at that, you know, back to that, because talk about having fun. I mean, it's so beautiful down there. You can't even imagine until you do it. So yeah, is there anything else? Cool. Nothing comes to mind, but I'm just full up with stuff right now. You know,
yeah.
I will say this. I do like talking to people, and I've enjoyed since the book talking to students, you know, business students, film students, television students, and also groups, you know, I mean, again, it's been virtual, but, if I have an opportunity to share some of my experiences and things that happened to me in my career that might be helpful to other people, I think that's going to be a lot of fun too. I want to do more of that.
It's fun. I can definitely hear the teacher in there, and I think great leaders are great teachers, and I appreciate that. That'll be fun for you, for sure. Now, I always tell people you can't force fun. So would you like to play or would you like to walk away at this point?
I'll play. But as I indicated, if I start crying and run out, then we're pretty much done, right? Okay.
So you'll play. You just won't lose is what you're,
exactly.
What you're saying.
Exactly.
All right. We spun the wheel. You got Survey Says. Survey Says is popular TV game show where we surveyed 100 people and we're looking for one of the top five answers. If you decided to live a simpler life, what's the first thing you would get rid of?
Money.
Oh, money is a great answer. I'm going to count that. Job is on here, but money is a beautiful answer. Anything else you'd throw out on the list?
Well, I think at that point, everything's gone. So no money. let's see. No, I think if I could live a life without money, that would be much simpler.
That's so funny. Great answer. The number one answer was TV and cable.
That's funny. Well, that's because people have a bad relationship with their cable operators. I'm with them on that.
They do for sure. After finally moving the couch for the first time in 10 years, name something you might find underneath it.
Baseball glove.
Oh, I get that. Toys is our number four answer. Ironically, money is the number one answer.
You know, I was going to say money, but I had previously used that in my, yeah. You know, in the first question. So I couldn't use it again.
It's funny. All right. This one should not be money.
Whatever the question is, money is my answer. I'm just going to say that.
What is a bad habit that kids pick up from their older brothers and sisters? You were the oldest child.
Cheating.
Cheating. Interesting. Not on our list. What do you think? You got another guess?
I have to guess, really. Playing hooky.
Oh, that's good. Lying on the list, for sure. Bad attitude. Swearing was the number one answer.
Swearing. Swearing. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations. You got 2 out of 3. That means you earn a free promo for whatever you want to talk about here as we wrap up. Do you have any ask for the audience or gives that we should pay attention to?
I'm sorry. Asks for the audience.
Yeah. Anything that we can do to help you or anything that you can do to help us.
Okay. So here's what it is. Read my book and leave a review for me on Amazon. And I'm saying that not because I want you to buy the book, but I just think it would be fun for you to read the book. And if you do, tell me how you like it. That's all.
I will definitely be checking it out. It's called Constant Comedy, How I Started Comedy Central and Lost My Sense of Humor. Art Bell has been our guest, and he's the author of that book and the host of the Constant Comedy podcast. You can find all of that information at artbellwriter.com. And I think that's it. I really appreciate you showing up here and having a conversation with us, Art. You can find Playful Humans at playfulhumans.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify. Give us a thumbs up and leave a comment or review. Love to hear what you have to say, suggestions for future guests, ideas of how you can play for a living, all great. Put those in the chat and find us at playfulhumans.com. Until next time, if you can't be good at it. That's what I always say. Now go play, everybody.
Don't wait for tomorrow. Live for today. Keep on chasing.
I think we figured out the song that I need to figure out how to play is my outro, Art.